The redhead pointed at still another door, this one labeled T.R. Beauregard, Director.
"He's waiting for you," said the redhead, still smiling.
T.R. Beauregard's office was big enough to land a rocket jumper in it, Tavallera thought. The director's desk was wide, gleaming, impressive. Beauregard himself was standing behind it, hands clasped behind his back, giving Tavallera an imitation of a steely gaze. He wore a dark gray tunic over a white turtleneck shirt. It made him look almost like a minister, Tavallera thought. The man was chunky. His face looked soft, like children's putty, although he was doing his best to make his dark eyes seem piercing. A holographic display hovered over one corner of Beauregard's desk. From where Tavallera was standing, it looked like a list or a printed form hanging there in midair a few centimeters above the desk's gleaming surface. Gesturing to the display, Beauregard said, "Says here in your file that you've got a degree in electromechanical engineering," Tavallera prompted. "Yeah, whatever. Electromechanical," Beauregard said. Standing before the desk, Tavallera explained, "It means I'm qualified to work on electromechanical systems, like the actuators that control a spacecraft's life support systems."
"Spent some time out in space, did you?"
Tavallera nodded.
"Well, the work you'll be doing here won't be spacey, that's for sure." Gesturing impatiently, Beauregard said, "Sit down, sit down."
Tavallera sat in one of the two handsome armchairs in front of the desk. They were covered in smooth, deep burgundy leather. Real leather from the feel of it, Tavallera thought. Beauregard sank into his high-backed swivel chair and regarded him unsmilingly for several moments. At last he said,
"What we're doing here is God's own work, my boy. You ought to be proud to be allowed to take part in it."
God's work again, Tavallera thought. He bit back the reply that leaped into his mind. Beauregard turned slightly in his chair, and the wall on Tavallera's right began to glow.
"Look at this," said the project director grandly.
The wall screen showed a wide expanse of water. No land in sight. Soft blue waves surging across the sea beneath a pastel blue sky dotted with fat white clumps of clouds.
"That's the Gulf of Mexico," Beauregard said. "Some people are calling it the Sea of Mexico. It's got so big."
The camera seemed to be moving swiftly across the wide sweep of water. Off in the distance, Tavallera saw something jutting up from the water. The camera zoomed in on a single slim tower standing in the midst of the sea, bright silvery metal glinting in the sunlight.
"That's the New Orleans Monument," said the project director, "memorializing all those poor souls that got themselves drowned in the flooding."
"I was just a kid when it happened," Tavallera said.
"Yeah, yeah. And now watch this."
The camera sank beneath the waves. The ruins of the city sprawled across the sea bottom, shimmering in the shallow sunlit waters. Rows of buildings, most of them roofless, street after street. Then, before Tavallera's eyes, a huge dome began to take form, a dome of glass. Computer graphics, he realized. The camera moved through the glass shell, and inside it grew new buildings and walkways, hotels and parks, thronging crowds of people strolling along from one garishly lit building to another. Children ran by laughing. People stood along the curving transparent shell and looked out at the remains of New Orleans.
"That's what we're gonna build," said T.R. Beauregard. "And you're gonna be part of my team."
Chapter 3
"Me?"
Tavallera blurted.
"Yep. You and about 1,000 other bright young men and women. We're gonna build an underwater center right smack in the middle of old New Orleans."
"That's the restoration project?"
"That's it. Kinda grand, ain't it? Hotels, amusement parks. That shell's gonna be made out of glass steel. We're importing it from Cellini on the moon. Had to get special permits from the Archbishop's office."
"How does that restore New Orleans?" Tavallera wondered.
"It'll attract tourists. It'll show the survivors of the tragedy that God hasn't forgotten them. It'll bring money into the region."
"And who gets the money?" Tavallera asked silently. He knew better than to say it aloud.
We're going to have a big exhibit down there showing how man's evil ways brought on the floods. God's wrath, you know. Rampant sex, crime in the streets, child abuse and all that. The new morality's putting up half the money for the dome. And the other half? Federal government and the state of Louisiana.
But there isn't any state of Louisiana anymore, Tavallera said. It's all underwater, isn't it?
Most of it, Beauregard admitted cheerfully. There's a little bitty corner left. Enough to qualify for 2 seats in the U.S. Senate and 1 in the House of Representatives.
And federal handouts.
Don't call them handouts, boy, Beauregard waved a warning finger. They're entitlements.
So you want me to work on this project?
That's right. You've been in space. You worked in spacesuits. I figured working underwater won't be all that different. You're used to it, ain't you?
Tavallera had to swallow hard. Underwater. For the first time since he'd been a child, he wanted to cry. Beauregard wasn't one to waste time. He walked Tavallera down the corridor to a big room filled with mostly empty workstations and handed him over to a quartet of engineers huddled over a wide display table in one corner. They immediately began briefing him on details of the project.
You're going to be our point man, said one of them, a thin-faced, balding man with a big silver crucifix dangling around his neck.
Tavallera thought it looked pretty heavy.
You'll have a lot of responsibility, said another, younger, his face round and pouchy-eyed.
It took some time before Tavallera tumbled to the fact that what they meant was that he was going down into the water to supervise the dome's construction while they would be directing his work from the dry safety of a big dredging barge. He felt totally depressed by the time the day ended and he rode the nearly silent maglev commuter train back to the suburb where his mother's house stood. I'll have to get my own apartment downtown, Tavallera told himself, and some life insurance. He scrolled through the channels on the TV screen set into the train's seat back. The newscasts showed mostly scenes of devastation, a firefight in some dust-blown village, cruise missiles being launched from a warship, twisted, burned bodies of people that the voiceover identified as terrorists. Some of them looked like children to Tavallera. The Nets had no listing for the northern lights he'd seen the previous night. Guess they don't think it's news, Tavallera said to himself. But hell, seeing the lights down here this far south is really something different. It ought to be on the news someplace. Still, he could find no mention of it on any news show. Not even the Science Channel mentioned it. They were doing a docudrama about the search for Noah's Ark. Switching to the entertainment channels, Tavallera flicked from one stupefyingly banal show to another. Family comedies, cartoons, historical dramas about saints and sinners. A horror vid about scientists using clone slaves and nanomachines to destroy the world. Nothing about the Northern Lights. It was twilight by the time he got off the train and hailed an auto cab to drive him home from the station. My credit account's getting thin, he realized. I'll have to go to work for them, get some money coming in. The cab's automated guidance system left him precisely at the driveway of his mother's modest vinyl-paneled Dutch colonial-style house. He stood on the sidewalk for a moment as the taxi purred away into the lengthening shadows. The street was silent except for the dry rustling of the trees in the warm evening breeze. Not a soul in sight. No kids playing. Nobody walking a dog, even. The neighborhood looked sterile, as if none of the houses was occupied. A police car glided by, then stopped a few meters up the street. A black-uniformed police officer stepped out of the car and walked slowly toward Tavallera. Despite her white plastic helmet, he recognized that the officer was a woman, almost petite in stature. But she carried a pistol at her hip, its holster flap unbuttoned. "Sir, can I help you?" she asked. Her voice was slightly muffled by the clear plastic face screen of her helmet.
I just got home, Tavallera said.
The police officer glanced at the house.
You live here, sir?
Yeah.
We have no record of a person fitting your description in residence at this address, sir.
I just came back a couple of days ago.
That would be entered into our files, sir.
I'm not a permanent resident. I'm visiting.
Your name, sir?
Raul Tavallera. The police officer pulled a slim palm comp from her shirt pocket.
Spell it, please. Tavalera spelled both his names.